The Baltimore Ravens have finally answered Lamar Jackson's plans and signed him a number one wide receiver, coming off an ACL who hasn't played in over a calendar year. But yes, they love Lamar and want to make him happy. Also, we're going to talk about the ongoing speculation with Carolina Panthers picking at number one, and the pivotal pick of the draft might be the Cardinals at number three, and interest is picking up in that pick. With me to break it all down each and every single week, we have Pro Football Network senior NFL analyst, Mr. Trey Wingo, and Pro Football Network senior NFL draft analyst, Mr. Tony Pauline. Gentlemen, how are you doing today?
We're doing great, but I think that we need to let people in on the show before the show, because I think sometimes the show before the show is actually better than the actual show. Yes. Like, just so people know, before we get started here, Brett was all mopey and upset. You know, wasn't feeling good about himself. So we went into a diatribe about Winnie the Pooh.
We did.
And that seemed to cheer him up. And so now we're off and ready to roll, baby. Let's go.
That's good. We you guys missed our one round Winnie the Pooh mock draft. We'll release that later as we get closer to the draft. But look, I kicked it off. Let's start with the signing of Odell Beckham Jr. to the Baltimore Ravens. I made a little joke, but look, Odell Beckham Jr. has been a number one receiver in this league. He signed a 1-year, $15 million contract in Baltimore. Trey, let's start with you. What does this mean for the Ravens? And what does this mean, more importantly, for the Ravens and Lamar Jackson?
Well, that's interesting, right? Because there are layers to this thing. Right. First of all, let's just be clear. This is the first true wide receiver that the Ravens have had in the Lamar Jackson era, okay? In fact, look, they've had some good wide receivers over the years. Don't get me wrong. You know, Torrey Smith, Steve Smith Jr. Spent a few years there. But in the history of the Ravens franchise, here's the entire list of wide receivers that have gone to the Pro Bowl as a wide receiver. Zero. They've never had one. Wow. So they've had a couple, you know, Jacoby Jones and a couple other people as kick returners. They've never had one go as a wide receiver. So this is a very significant move in the Ravens organization. Just they went out and got a guy who potentially, coming off, like you said, an ACL, hasn't played in over a year, could be a true number one wide receiver. So that's one layer to it. They overpaid by a mile for Odell Beckham Jr. Talking to other people around the league, there wasn't anybody within $6 million of their 1-year, potentially $18 million contract that they gave Odell Beckham Jr. So if they are going way above and beyond what the other market thought was out there for Odell, why would they do that? Well, if you notice, when Odell announced that he was signing with the Ravens, he took a picture of his son on Instagram in a Ravens jersey. It was Lamar Jackson's jersey. Okay? So this is not just about the Ravens getting a wide receiver. This is about the Ravens signing a wide receiver to try and mend fences with the quarterback that they believe will eventually come back to them in Lamar Jackson. Because even though he's expressed on March 2nd that he wanted a trade, the market has been really not there for Lamar Jackson for a variety of reasons, which we've discussed and we will continue to discuss. So this, to me, is not only about the Ravens getting potentially a true number one wide receiver. It's also about trying to mend fences with a quarterback that they believe will eventually be coming back and playing for them, either with a new deal or under the tag.
Tony, what are your thoughts on this situation too? I mean, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. with the Giants, then he went to the Browns, then the Rams, the ACL injury. Is this a player who can get back to form and be explosive and really elevate that Ravens offense?
Well, the Ravens hope so. And you got to give the Ravens credit. I mean, their draft history has been miserable at the receiver position. I said in my mock draft, which was just released, I can't bear mocking a receiver to the Ravens in the first round yet again. Yeah. I mean, you know, Rashad Bateman has never panned out. He was selected in the first round 2021. Marquise Brown never panned out, first round pick in 2019. Brashard Perriman in 2015 was a disaster. Even Hayden Hurst, who was a tight end, never panned out for the team. So they do not have success.
Drafted ahead of Lamar Jackson, by the way, that year.
So they did not have success taking pass catchers in the first round of the draft. Why not go with Odell Beckham? I think it's a deal that works for everybody. Obviously, you know, as Trey pointed out, they needed a pass catcher. Now they don't have to take waste another first round pick on it. Now you make it more enticing. You make it more appetizing for Lamar Jackson to come back. And Odell Beckham plays on a one-year deal where he hopes that he gets back to prior form and then he can sign that big money contract in March of 2024. I think it's a good move for everybody involved. And as you said, you know, this is not another piece to entice Lamar Jackson and say, well, let's come back to the bargaining table and let's negotiate.
Yeah, it is interesting, though, Tony and Brett, like, that's the assumption, right?
Right.
Like, they believe this will work. If it doesn't, then it really becomes interesting because Odell, if you're Odell Beckham Jr., to me, there's no way you sign with the Ravens with that much uncertainty at quarterback. If you're Odell, you have to believe that this is going to work out.
Right.
Like, there's no other reason. You're not going there to catch passes from Huntley, okay? I get it. He went to the Pro Bowl last year. Option 4,642.
Put respect on Tyler Huntley's Pro Bowl name.
Yeah. So you're not – but that you're not doing it for that. That's not why you're doing – you're doing this under the assumption that Lamar Jackson is going back. And that's great. If he doesn't, then it becomes kind of a giant mess, right?
Yeah.
And the Ravens have done something that is very un-Baltimore-like. You know, Tony was alluding to the way they like to draft. I can't remember the last big-name potential guy that they brought in under – I mean, the Ravens model is draft, develop, and then release before you have to pay him. This is the exact opposite of that, right? They're doing the exact opposite thing of the way they've always done, and it's a roll of the dice because they know they've got to do something to re-ingratiate themselves back into Lamar Jackson's world.
Yeah, and that's the power of desperation, right? It forces people to deviate from their plans, to deviate from their long-held beliefs and strategies, and got to wonder how much of an effect desperation is having on this, you know, particular signing. Look, Odell Beckham Jr., you mentioned, Trey, getting, you know, upwards of $6 million more from the Ravens than he would have gotten elsewhere. You have to wonder how much the Ravens paid for the fact that they don't have certainty at the quarterback position and had to sweeten the deal for Odell to choose them over perhaps different destinations. So absolutely a situation we're going to keep an eye on, because it's not just, okay, the Ravens got a receiver. They still have to get the quarterback situation figured out, and that can linger for an extended period of time, as we are only a couple weeks away from the NFL draft. Now, look, speaking of which, as we get closer to big NFL events, whether it's the draft, the schedule release, the kickoff of the NFL season, that means it's the actual season to begin denigrating a Super Bowl MVP, a league MVP, and one of the greatest young quarterbacks we've ever seen in the league, because that's what we have to do each and every offseason. And that, of course, is in reference to Carson Palmer's recent comments this week and trying to elevate Joe Burrow by tearing down Patrick Mahomes. Trey, I'm going to start with you, and I think you might be the best person to start with on this. Why is there such an effort to tear down Patrick Mahomes right now?
I listen, you know, it started last season, last offseason, when they lost Tyreek, and, you know, there was that Mike Sando does a great job with The Athletic. He used to work with me at ESPN for many years. These anonymous defensive coordinators saying, well, you know, once you get Patrick off his first read, it's kind of street ball out there, you know. And Patrick heard all that, right? And he responded with, well, let's see, most passing touchdowns in the NFL, most passing yards in the NFL, single season record for most combined yards, and, oh, by the way, his second MVP and a second Super Bowl win and a second Super Bowl MVP. So, look, I get it. Carson Palmer is always going to be tied to the Bengals organization. I mean, they were the ones that drafted him. He spent the majority of his career there, even though it wasn't great for him. And he loves Joe Burrow. And there's a lot of things to love about Joe Burrow. A lot of people should love Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is great. Joe Burrow is arguably the second best quarterback in the NFL. Second best.
Mm-hmm.
Behind Patrick Mahomes. Okay? Like, it's not a debate. It's not an opinion. It's not a take. It's facts. Patrick Mahomes did more with less this year. I mean, just imagine Patrick Mahomes with T. Higgins, Boyd, and Jamar Chase. How's that going to work out?
Yeah.
Okay. Instead, it was not Christian Watson, Justin Watson.
And
that TikTok guy, Jim. No, Juju. Yeah. And that guy with three really weird names that the Packers didn't want. Mike Squelding. Oh, Marquez Valdez-Scantling. Right.
Yeah.
Those are the guys that he made all that work with.
Right.
And I'm not denigrating any of them. Well, maybe a little. The point I'm making is They're not Higgins, Boyd, and Chase, okay? They're not Diggs and everybody and Gabriel that they have in Buffalo. They're not Waddle and Hill. This guy is an outlier of all outliers. And if you want to build up Joe Burrow, that's fine. You can do it. There's a lot of reasons to love Joe Burrow. But to knock Patrick Mahomes in the process is just stupid. I don't understand why people are still doing it.
Tony, what's your take on the situation? I mean, you scouted, obviously, these quarterbacks as they were coming out. I don't think anyone thought Patrick Mahomes was going to immediately become what he has become. But still, the dialogue around him, at what point does a player do enough to cement his status as the greatest in the league?
It'll never be enough. I mean, people will always look to poke holes in a person's game for whatever reason. You go back to, you know, Trevor Lawrence. If you remember, Trevor Lawrence in the pre-draft process made some comments and people said, oh, he doesn't love football. He's not going to walk through fire to play football. And this was a guy who, if you remember, his last season at Clemson missed two games because he was COVID positive, dropped out of the Heisman Trophy candidacy, but came back and played when he really could have redshirted the rest of the season and still would have been the first pick of the draft. Yeah. Point being is this is going to go on forever. I mean, people will look to poke holes there and to find issues that just aren't there because they've got nothing better to do.
Yeah.
Trevor Lawrence, the same. I'm not saying that to her. Justin Herbert, you know, does he really love football? Like he went and got his medical degree. Does he really love football? It happens. It happens all the time. But it's kind of different because Carson's been through the fire.
Yeah.
You know, Carson knows what this is about. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know what else Patrick Mahomes can do except continue to be better than everybody else. Like, you can like all these other people, but 15 has the receipts.
Okay. He's got the
receipts.
It's on his shelf.
He's got the hardware. He's got the numbers. There's three players in the history of the NFL that thrown for 50 touchdown passes in a season. Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, and Patrick Mahomes.
I've heard of those guys.
I don't know what else to tell you, man. Yeah. Like if you don't understand how good this – I mean, someone asked me once to rate the top five quarterbacks in the NFL, and the top two were easy. One was Patrick Mahomes, and two was Patrick Mahomes on one leg.
Yeah, that'll do it. Look, I said this on Twitter earlier. This to me is beginning to get worse than even the LeBron versus Jordan debates, because we're not even trying to argue Mahomes to a previous legend. This is like trying to argue LeBron to Dwayne Wade in their primes. And it's getting that ridiculous. So we will see. I'm sure between now and the next scheduled NFL event, someone else will say something preposterous about Patrick Mahomes, because it is that time of the year. But we're going to move on here, and we're going to talk about perhaps another quarterback who's going to come into the league and probably take the league by storm. At least the Panthers hope so. Tony, you've reported on this show that C.J. Stroud and Anthony Richardson seem to be the two quarterbacks that the Panthers were beginning to really zero in on. But Trey, Bryce Young just had his visit there. We all have noted on this show how he interviewed. Has that dynamic changed, in your opinion, Trey, in Carolina?
Well, as Tony knows better than anybody, it's not just about arm strength to be a quarterback, right? You have to check a lot of boxes. And there's a million things that go into this process. It's the most important position in team sports in this country by a mile. Like, it's not close. And you have to really be able to do everything. So there's a lot that goes into, especially if you're going to take a guy number one overall. You have to be pretty sure that this is going to work out. You don't want to have a Tim Couch situation, for lack of a better term. So you have to do a lot of research. And I can tell you that in this process, there is something that is giving the Panthers some hesitancy about C.J. Stroud. And I'm not sure exactly what that is, but there is something that – I mean, look, someone asked me once, hey, who's your favorite quarterback in this draft? And I said, can I cheat? And they said, yes. I said, I'll take – Bryce Young's brain in C.J. Stroud's body, because, you know, C.J. has the body and Bryce has, you know, the thing you're concerned about with Bryce is the body, right? Mm-hmm. So if you could mesh those two together, that would be the ideal quarterback in this draft. So there's something in this run-up that has the Panthers a little concerned about what's going on with C.J. Stroud. And I think that's why there might be some gravitation back towards Bryce Young as potentially being the number one overall pick.
Now, Tony, correct me if I'm wrong. CJ Stroud has yet to have his visit with the Panthers. I think that's coming up either this week or next week. So as this process plays out, whatever those concerns are, you would hope that CJ Stroud has the ability to still change some minds there. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, teams are now going through their final draft meeting, so nothing's been decided. And I'm sure this is going to be debated, you know, right up until the final minute. And the NFL is going to love that. But the fact is this, you know, go to 2 weeks ago, watch the show 2 weeks ago when I said that general managers who have spoken with Bryce Young says he comes across as a genius. I mean, that was the word that was used to me. So there's a lot to like there. You know, when you speak to Bryce Young, he comes across like that. It's a question of, does the size, does the lack of growth potential, is that a major concern? As far as C.J. Stroud, I mean, Bryce Young's career on the college level was significantly better, significantly more consistent than C.J. Stroud. And what teams have to decide is, you know, did the Ohio State coaching staff with the Ohio State offense, did they put the handcuffs on C.J. Stroud too much? What C.J. Stroud are we getting? Are we getting the guy that we saw basically manhandle the Georgia defense in the semifinal game of the college football playoffs in January? Are we getting the guy that, you know, had his will against Utah the prior year in the Rose Bowl? Or are we getting the guy who was a slow starter against, like, Iowa and couldn't get the team in the end zone, could never beat Michigan? And if it's that, if it is that C.J. Stroud, why is it? Was it him? Or was it the way the Ohio State offense was run? Because, you know, if you watch Ohio State, they let C.J. Stroud run the offense in that Georgia game. Mm-hmm. If you watch the game before that, when C.J. Stroud's up at the line of scrimmage, he's looking over to the sidelines and the play clock is clicking down and he's not looking, surveying the defense. He's not being able to make his own decisions. So obviously, you know, that is a big question, and that's something they're going to have to answer. I still think it's going to be C.J. Stroud. Mm.
Let me ask this. Is the we talk about the gap between the difference in size between a C.J. Stroud and Anthony Richardson and then a Bryce Young and that size being a concern. Is the gap that's there existing equivalent to the perceived gap between Bryce Young as a quote-unquote genius and whatever C.J. Stroud's perceived level is? Is that gap also as big that is, you know, giving everyone pause?
In my opinion, it shouldn't be, because go back to what I said. When they let him play against Georgia, you know, C.J. Stroud, he's immobile, he's a pocket passer. Well, he showed enough mobility in that Georgia game to get outside the pocket and make plays. When they let him play, you could see that he's making good decisions. C.J. Stroud was not a poor decision maker at Ohio State. He would just at times couldn't get the team into the offense, and I believe it's because he was handcuffed. But the problem is with Bryce Young, the intelligence is just off the charts. Yeah. And like something we haven't seen in the longest time. Go back again. What I said, general manager told me at Ohio State Pro Day, if C.J. Stroud was 6 foot, if Bryce Young was 6 foot two, he's the best quarterback prospect of the last 10, 15 years. Understandable. So, you know, both guys, are you willing to give up, you know, the size and the vertical game for what you're getting cognitively with Bryce Young, or are you going to take the size and the arm strength and maybe there'll be more bumps in the road with C.J. Stroud?
Yeah, and one thing, too, about Bryce, and Tony, you were talking about this and the way he sort of manipulated the scales versus play at the combine and the pro day. I heard reports this week that there were times at Alabama this past season he was playing at under 180 pounds.
Wow.
180 pounds.
And he looks it. I mean, you look at it, he looks like a small dude back there. And
he looks like Devontae Smith, you know, and that's a concern.
It has to be. And it's not only, you know, 204 pounds. Is he going to be able to gain 15 pounds, get up to 210, 215, and play it that way?
Right.
You know, that's what they're going to have to figure out.
I don't know if he can play at 204. I think he got up to 204. For the combine, and to Trey's point, I mean, you're talking at potentially a 25 plus pound difference if he was playing any games below 180 to what he weighed in at the combine, which then of course he didn't weigh in at the pro day, so we don't know what he performed at that throwing weight. So that's the big concern. But we will see. Look, I think the safe bet here is that some combination of Bryce Young and CJ Stroud are going to go 1 and 2 in this draft, with the Houston Texans picking at number 2. To me, the intrigue begins at pick number 3 with the Arizona Cardinals. We spoke a little bit about this last week, but as we get closer to the draft, gentlemen, it looks like the interest is going to continue to peak up in the trend in the upwards direction. Trey, what are you hearing about that number 3 pick? And is it for an Anthony Richardson? Is it for a Will Levis? It looks like you got to get in front of Indianapolis to get the quarterback that is remaining.
Yeah, it's about a quarterback. I don't know which one, but it's about a quarterback, because the Arizona Cardinals are stuck with their quarterback at the moment, Kyler
That's
Murray.
Putting it nicely.
Yeah, who had the big contract last offseason. So if you want to get a quarterback, the team you want to jump ahead of is the Indianapolis Colts at 4. And by the way, you know, I'm not sure of any of these quarterbacks.
Agreed.
In this draft, right? It's, I mean, people are going to draft them because you got, you know, teams need quarterbacks. This is not a great quarterback draft. It's a great draft for a lot of teams that need quarterbacks. Does that make sense? Okay. You know, I mean, this is not 83 or 2004. Okay. There are some guys there that they think maybe can play, and we're going to find out.
Are we overrating the class because of how bad the class was last year, in your opinion?
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And I think Tony would probably agree with that, right?
I mean, I express who is this we you speak about, Kemosabe, because I still have Anthony Richardson and Will Levis way down on my overall draft board.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where they're going to be drafted. And my draft board, the top of my draft board is all defensive players, because those are the best players in the draft. Yeah. Now, does it mean that's where they're going to end up? And quarterbacks, as we've seen the past 20 years, are consistently overdrafted.
Absolutely.
And that's what's going to happen in 2 weeks.
He agrees with us. I mean, look, quarterbacks are going to be so overdrafted. And they have been for the last few years. But this one seems like they're real. Like, who heard of Anthony Richardson going in the first round before the last couple of weeks?
Mm.
Right? Nobody was talking about that. And now suddenly everybody's talking about Anthony Richardson. And look, I hope the kid balls out. I hope he has a great career. I hope he's drafted and has all the success in the world. But man, the media we in general, the draft industrial complex is really all in on these quarterbacks, and I'm just not so sure about any of them. So, that got away from the point of your question, but you're trying to get ahead of Indianapolis, and that's why Adam Schefter reported last week that there are potentially 6 teams. Of course, the Arizona Cardinals are the ones putting that out, and we always say in this time, information comes out for a reason, right? At this time of year, information is leaked to get it out there to give an advantage to someone, something, some team. So if it's coming from the Cardinals organization that, we've had talked with 6 teams about that third overall pick, I don't know, we're really good with any of them, that's basically their way of saying, pony up, boys.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to come get our pick, we'll listen, but what you're offering ain't nearly enough.
Yeah, and Tony, look, you're obviously very plugged into the behind the scenes efforts of teams during the, you know, especially this time of year. What are you hearing about the amount of teams that may realistically be interested in moving up to number 3?
Listen, I made a bunch of calls to see if I could get the names of 6 teams. I got 3 teams. We've talked about 2 of them in the past: Tennessee and Seattle, and then or maybe Indianapolis moves up 1 spot to secure the quarterback that they want. So those are the only 3 teams that I have heard of who have an interest now in moving up. And if anybody moves up, you know, it's going to be for Anthony Richardson. I don't think any team's moving up for Will Levis, because despite what people, the mock drafts, they have Will Levis in the top 10, I continue to hear other things about Will Levis, which is going to push him down draft boards and may surprise a lot of people on draft day, not out of the first round, but out of the top 12 picks because of the concerns there. So all I've heard are the 3 teams. We'll see if there are more moving forward. But I agree with Trey. I mean, obviously it's Arizona-based. Arizona's getting the information out there because Arizona wants to get a Chicago Bear-like package.
Yeah.
You know, move down and get a good player and have a ton of draft capital moving forward.
Yeah. You know, you got to wonder how much the Colts really kind of shot themselves in the foot by not being able to secure that trade for number one with the Chicago Bears. They are in desperate need of a quarterback, a young quarterback, and they will likely have to take the best of the rest, essentially, by the time it gets to pick number four, unless they move to number three. And Tony, I hear the same things that I believe that you are about Will Levis. I've said that here on this show too. So we'll see if, you know, to fall out of the top 10 would be a massive disappointment to the hype machine that's been around him. We'll see how that, you know, comes into reality on draft night. Now, before we get going into some more, you know, specific draft related topics, I do want to talk about a prominent NFL player who could also be on the move either during or maybe after the draft, and that's Titans running back Derrick Henry. Trey, this would be a pretty big move, but is it a big move in name only, or could Derrick Henry continue to have a massive impact elsewhere?
Well, it's a big move in name and size, for sure, right? I mean, but you know, this is what you're seeing is the new sort of front office taking over, and what we thought the Tennessee Titans were and what they have been under John Robinson is no longer, right? That's what we're seeing. Rand Carthon is there now, and obviously the Titans are an interesting team because Ryan Tannehill's a really good quarterback when he has Derrick Henry. Mm-hmm. And when he doesn't have Derrick Henry, he's not so good. And, of course, last year they had to go to Joshua Dobbs because of concerns about Malik Willis, which they took out of Liberty last year. So this is basically an evolution of the Tennessee franchise. And Derrick Henry is still potentially a very dominant running back. But, I mean, time waits for no man, right? Even Tom Brady actually effing retired, okay? So, like, the way Derrick plays and the size, it's eventually catching up to him. And if someone wants to take him on, I've heard the Cowboys potentially interested. But it would have to be at their price, not at Derrick Henry's price.
Right.
You know, that's the thing. If anybody's taken Derrick Henry, it's on a reduced deal. So, I mean, I think it's more likely that he's going to be released and then signed to a new contract than traded for. And Derrick Henry still has all kinds of things he can do for you, but the clock is ticking. And at some point, that clock is going to catch up with Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
I also think a lot of it will depend on if Tennessee is able to trade up
to number three.
Yeah, and Anthony Richardson, because that's the sign that they're going to move on. And in order for them to move up, they're going to have to give away a lot of draft capital. Maybe you get a portion of that back by trading Derrick Henry. If they trade up and they get Anthony Richardson, you know, it's in the future. If they can't get a quarterback, maybe they try and keep it all together one more year and make one more last sprint to see if it works out.
Yeah, could also see a scenario where Derrick Henry's in the package to move up to number three. With Arizona, you know, all those things are certainly on the table. Well, look, that would be a substantial move involving the NFL running back. I do want to talk about the running back position in this draft. It's a position we haven't spoken about. But before we do, I want to give a quick shout out to all of our friends who help us support the show here, Football Insiders at Pro Football Network. And the first is our good friends at Caesar Sports. There is still a ton going on around the sports world. Just because the Super Bowl has happened doesn't mean sports has come to an end, even though the football is at the center of our universe. And you can get involved in the action on all of these sports by going over to Caesar Sportsbook. You can download the app or you can go to Caesars.com. And when you do for the very first time and place your very first wager, if you lose, you're going to get 100% of your stake back as a free bet. And that's going to be all the way up to a bet of $1,250. And win or lose on that free bet, you'll also get 1,000 reward credits and 1,000 tier credits, which are exclusive perks of Caesar Sportsbook. Redeem this offer using promo code PFNCZR. That's PFNCZR. Use that code at either Caesars.com or the Caesar Sportsbook app. Additionally, I want to give a shout out to Underdog Fantasy. They've been with us for a very long time. And the great thing about Underdog is fantasy football never ends, whether it's the Super Bowl or not, with all of their best ball tournaments. Make sure you start drafting now and get up to a $100 deposit bonus when you use promo code PFN at sign up. And you can do that at underdogfantasy.com or downloading the Underdog app. And again, that's code PFN at sign up for a $100 deposit bonus only at Underdog Fantasy. Tony, I want to talk about a potential mid-round talent at the running back position. Everyone knows Bijan Robinson, but there's some other talent at this position. But one guy in particular who could be dramatically impacted, especially around whether or not he was going to be able to perform at the combine.
Well, he didn't perform at the combine. The guy you're talking about is Sean Tucker, the running back from Syracuse, who had a terrific season, really came out of nowhere, and was considered moving into the process as a potential maybe late third, fourth round pick. That has changed. As I reported on Pro Football Network March 20th, he basically failed his combine medical and was not given the clearance to participate in the combine workout. He also then didn't work out at Pro Day. He was on the sidelines in street clothes. As I reported back on March 20th, he's going back for the combine medical recheck. He actually is there at the time when we are recording this, and doctors are going to relook at the situation. All I can say is that it's a medical situation versus an injury situation.
Okay.
And the hopes are that Sean Tucker, the situation calms itself down. If he's given the green light to work out at the combine recheck, then he will work out four scouts before the draft. I'm told that's not very likely to happen. So what will happen with Sean Tucker is each team will look at the evaluation, decide when or if he's able to play football. He's probably going to end up as a potential late draft pick, maybe an undrafted free agent. And then when teams are happy or comfortable with the situation, they'll invite him in. They'll give him a chance. Very talented player, but he's being red flagged because of the medical condition, and he may go from a late third or early fourth round pick to being undrafted and will have to go through camp and make it the hard way.
Right. The distinction between medical and injury calls to mind other players we've seen this happen to, most notably, and we've talked about him a lot, is Trey Smith, the guard from the Kansas City Chiefs. This is not something you're unfamiliar with all the years you've spent calling NFL drafts.
No, and that's why – you know, and Tony and I have talked about this before on this show. Some of the most important things that happen at the combine aren't the things we see, right? Yeah. It's the interviews and the medicals, and especially if it's not injury related. Look, drafting is probably the most inexact science there is. I mean, let's just be honest about it. You have a 50% fail rate in the first round. So, that's why they grind like this, because they're trying so hard to get everything right. And these medical situations that come up, you know, sometimes they raise a lot of red flags, and sometimes they're legitimate, and sometimes they're things that can be taken care of. And that certainly was the case with Trey Smith. It was, he was a sixth rounder. He was first round talent.
Yeah.
Playing on a Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs offensive line on a rookie sixth round deal. Good for Brett Veach, not so good for Trey Smith, but he's going to get his eventually.
Yeah.
But, you know, these medicals, like the tight end out of the free agent out of the Raiders, Moreau, it was a doctor's visit that found out that he had a form of cancer. And so he's working with that. So these medical things, I think, sometimes are the most important things that come out of the combine. As Tony alluded to it, you know, weeks ago, what we don't see is way more important than the things we do see.
Yeah.
And Montez Sweat. Remember Montez Sweat?
Yes.
I'm looking up the kid's name now. You remember the big defensive tackle from Utah, Star Lutalele.
I mean, Star Lutalele. Yeah.
He was projected as the top five pick. There were some concerns there about a heart issue. He ends up as the 14th selection of the draft. So, yeah, I mean, people talk about the 40s and the vertical jumps and this and that. The heck with that. You know, a bad medical will kill the prospect's draft grade more than anything else.
Well, certainly keeping Sean Tucker in our thoughts, hopefully everything works out and he's able to pursue a career in the NFL, assuming that's what he wants. Let's put a position focus here on some of the big uglies in this draft. Tony, the center position might be one of the more unheralded positions in football, but also one of the most important, and it never gets talked about. There are a number of teams with a need at this position. Walk us through who the players are that are worthy of getting drafted and some of the teams that might be looking to call their name on draft night.
Some of the teams have desperate needs at the center position. You look at Seattle. Evan Brown is their starting center, started 24 games since 2018. Arizona, Hajolte Froholt, you know, who comes from the land of the ice and snow, has started six games in 4 years, and he was more an offensive guard. The Jets have the winner of the group, Wes Schweitzer. I mean, he started 60 games in 7 years, and the Giants are helped that Ben Bredesen can make the move from offensive guard to center. So these are teams with all desperate needs at the center position, desperate needs. And there's three guys at the top of the center board. There are different ratings on these guys, all from the Big Ten. Joe Tippmann of Wisconsin, John Michael Schmitz of Minnesota, and Luke Whipler of Ohio State. Teams go back and forth on John Michael Schmitz and Tippmann as the top centers. These guys are going to come off the board very quickly. There are a lot of people who believe that Joe Tippmann is the best interior lineman in this year's draft if we put Peter Skoronski of Northwestern as an offensive tackle. Couple things to look for. If you see a team such as the New York Jets move down into a later part of round one because there's no player there at 13 that they want, even the Pittsburgh Steelers, who don't have a desperate need at the center position, but they want to upgrade it, if they move down, if they're going to be moving down likely for one of those centers, Tippmann or John Michael Schmitz. Luke Whipler, the Jets like him. The Arizona Cardinals love him. They have the pick at the top of round two. I mean, that is a place where Whipler can end up. But the fact is this: there are three good centers in this draft, three really top centers in this draft. There are four teams that have desperate needs at the center position. So the demand outstrips the supply. Teams start to move down. Some of the teams I mentioned, it's going to be for one of those centers. Giants could even take a center with their first round pick to fill that need because there's such a desperation there.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm glad we're focusing on centers here for a minute because, you know, we all fall in love with tackles, right? Because the edge rushers are coming out there. The center is the most difficult position on the offensive line. I mean, he's got to literally snap the ball and then block and also call out the blocking schemes. Like that's his job. And you have to be whip smart to play center. And that I think sometimes is the thing that is, not thought about enough. Forget movement and all this kind of stuff. Does this guy know what he needs to do, right? Does he understand the responsibilities at the next level and how massively different they are from playing in college? And that's the key to finding a really good center, is finding someone who's smart enough to do that.
Yeah, I was with Kansas City Chiefs right tackle Lucas Niang earlier today, and part of our session, we're prepping for the different looks and responsibilities that he may face, you know, sort of these if-then situations. And I ask him, like, okay, you know, how are you finding out, you know, if this is the call, if you're doing, you know, going left, going right, whatever the case is? And he goes, you know, it's whatever Creed calls out. I gotta listen to what Creed Humphrey says. And it's what he'll say him and Pat handle that. And that's what teams are looking for. And Creed Humphrey was doing that from the time he got drafted as a rookie. You're looking for a young center who can come in and handle that responsibility. And one of the things that an offensive lineman will tell you, that responsibility is keeping the quarterback on his feet. And that is what is most important right there. So be really interesting to see which of those guys got in. I got to tell you something, all three of those names, Tony, those are 100% Big Ten names. John Michael Schmidt, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is the fourth center also comes from the Big Ten. The fourth center off the board, Juice Scruggs of Penn State, another great name, played guard, moved center.
What else could he play but center?
There you go. You know, could be a late third round pick, so he could be the opt-out or the contingency plan for one of these four teams that don't end up with Tippmann, John Michael Schmitz, or Luke Whipler.
All right, well, look, let's finish up the show here with this, because as we get closer to the draft, players, as we've mentioned, start to fall down the board due to a number of things that come up during the draft process. But there's also those players that are rising up teams' draft boards. Tony, who are the latest risers we should be keeping an eye out for as we get closer to the NFL draft?
Yeah, one no-name guy came into the season with street free agent grades, had a good year, had a good week of practice at the Shrine Game. Chandler Zavala from North Carolina State, offensive guard, goes 6'3 and a half, 316 pounds, had a good pro day, 32-inch vertical jump. He's an athletic zone blocker that people like. You know, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, Zavala is maybe a late-round pick, priority free agent type. Now he's solidified himself as a mid-day three choice. Some people think he's going to get into the second day. I don't agree with that. But anyway, Zavala, who really wasn't considered a draftable prospect in September, has cemented himself as a day three choice. Jartavius Martin, another guy who wasn't even mentioned by scouts coming into the season, the defensive back from Illinois, which is quickly turning into defensive back U, had a great season, had a terrific lead up into the draft. Good Senior Bowl, good workout at the combine. He is a guy who, when you look at the safety position, it's Brian Branch and of Alabama than anybody's guess. Jartavius Martin is starting to move up. Wouldn't surprise me if he's a second-round choice. He's made visits to the Green Bay Packers and the New York Giants and the Detroit Lions, all safety-needy teams. Darnell Wright is getting a lot of love, and it's well-deserved. Darnell Wright, the right tackle from Tennessee, he's a guy who played terrific during his senior season. He was dominant Senior Bowl practice, tested off the charts at the combine. No one expected the guy who's 332 pounds to run in the low fives with a quick 10-yard split. That's what Darnell Wright did. I spoke with people who feel that in the end, Darnell Wright could be a guy who plays over 340 pounds and is 15% body fat. Wow. He is that athletic. He is that big. He is that powerful. He could go as early as 17 to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I know our friend Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl has been really touting him. Yep. And cemented himself as a first rounder. It's just how early is he going to go? Some people say number 9 to the Bears. Some people say number 11 to the Tennessee Titans. That's a little bit rich for my blood. I think the Darnell Wright watch starts at 17 with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then someone we've mentioned on this program before, Adam Owima Adebowore of Northwestern.
You mentioned everybody because I can't say it.
There you go. We call he's affectionately known as Tommy, but you know, you hear about Kalijah Kancey, the defensive tackle from Pittsburgh, but Adebowore is bigger. He's more athletic. He ran the 2 tenths faster than Kancey at the combine. He's explosive. He doesn't have the production. There was not a lot of talent around him at the Northwestern as there was Kancey at Pittsburgh. He's a guy who could slide into the late part of round one. In my recent mock draft at Pro Football Network, I had him going to the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm told that Howie Roseman absolutely loves the guy. So Adebowore is one of those guys, and we see a lot of strange things happen late in round one. You know, he's got the measurables. He's got the athleticism. He's smart as a whip. I sat in a talk with him for about 30 minutes at the combine casually, and he's a very intelligent, articulate, likable guy. That's someone who I think could surprise people in the first round on draft night.
Really interesting. Look, Darnell Wright, by the way, incredible tape against Will Anderson, who many people think is the best player in this draft. So not a shock that he's being able to match the film with the athletic ability. So really, really interesting to see where he goes there. Gentlemen, we are just a couple weeks away from the NFL draft. This has been a ton of fun in going through this all with you, as we've done each and every year for the past couple years. Let's keep it going for a few more weeks. We will all be back here next week. I am Brett Yarris. With me, as always, Pro Football Network senior NFL analyst Trey Wingo and Pro Football Network senior NFL draft